Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. Now, for those of you tuning in for the Behind the Mask show, that new show time is at 7 p.m. with Ed English, and he's speaking to best-selling author Richard A. Knack, widely known for his Dragon Realm, Dragonlance, and World of Warcraft books. So those of you who are looking for that, it's right around the corner, but please do stick with us, because even though I know Richard's a great guy, Lisa is a lot cuter, and we're going to talk about romance, and I know the guys want to know about romance. So in the meantime, I'm your host, Sheila English, and I am thrilled about tonight's show. I have my favorite author, one of the kindest people that I've ever met, Lisa Kleypas, is here with us. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. You are one of the kindest people I've ever met, so we're a pair.
All right. Now, I thought we'd talk about your Lifetime Achievement Award and your new series and where you're at with your historicals and what your favorites are and how you got started writing. I mean, who knows where this will go. But I promise that we're going to get a lot of stuff in within a half hour. I see there are a lot of people that are on the chat room, and they may have some questions. I'm going to start with one of the most asked questions I get when people talk about you. Are you ready?
Yes. Well, I can't wait to hear it.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Kleypas. You actually did it right. Although I will tell you, within the Kleypas family, you know, there's different branches. So some branches actually do pronounce it Kleypas, but the long I sound is usually how I do it. But, you know, I answer to everything, and I don't have particularly sensitive auditory capacity, so sometimes people will say it and I won't even notice. So.
You know, if people attach some sort of chocolate to it, I'll answer to anything.
Exactly. Or if George Clooney is saying it, you know, it doesn't matter how he pronounces it. Yeah.
Now, before we get too far, I want to let our listeners know we do have the live chat session open. I see a lot of people are taking advantage of that already, and you can call in if you have a question, 646-200-4071. After the show, you can download the podcast, share it, listen to it over and over like I'll probably do, and you can find that at readersentertainment.com after the live show. Now, Lisa, tell me, what is the most rewarding part of your job?
Oh, that's without question the connection that it gives me to my readers. It's really important to me, and I've had this connection, you know, really for more than 20 years, because I've been writing for so long. But it grows and it develops, you know, as your career does. So it's just incredible, because I get so much terrific feedback from readers, and I have personal stories that they've shared with me about, you know, a time where one of my books may have meant something to them for various reasons. And so it's rewarding, it's exciting, it's fulfilling to me. And, you know, there's a question a lot of writers get about whether or not you write for yourself or you write for readers. And I would say, even though I write things that I'm interested in, I definitely write for readers. So that relationship is precious to me.
Now, when in your career did you finally feel like you made it? Was there like an award or event or something that made you feel like finally you had arrived as an author?
Yeah, there was a particular book, and you know, the thing is, when you're starting out and you're working really hard, you're not quite sure when or if you're going to have a breakthrough, but there was this book that I did titled Suddenly You, and it had this gorgeous red cover, and it had kind of a backless woman, you know, a backless dress that this woman was wearing, and it was a Victorian romance. And so I actually wrote a romance about an author and her, you know, very sexy male publisher. And so that book, it just seemed like all these things came together and made the book, you know, a complete package. The cover was great. The story was a fun one that I really had a good time writing. And then all of a sudden it started hitting the charts and getting on bestseller lists. So my editor called me and said that it the first week out that it was the number one selling paperback of any kind in Borders. So that was like the first number one that I had ever had for anything. So that was kind of my breakthrough book, I think.
That's fun. I love that book.
Thank you.
I see people on the chat room. Sharina just wrote the raspberry scene. So obviously, other people love
that book. Fruit involved in one particular scene in that book, and I have no idea what inspired me. I will say at the time I was actually pregnant with my daughter, and so I was just full of hormones, or maybe I just had no inhibitions or whatever. So that book probably pushed the envelope more than I ever have before or since.
There are people here. They're saying they actually have two versions of that book, ebook and print. So it's still a very, very popular book.
I have to share with you, I had a Spanish book tour in 2005, one of the most fun experiences of my life, and the most wonderful Spanish readers would gather in groups and come to ask questions and listen to me talk. And at the end of one of these sessions, they came up and they said they had a special present for me, and it was this little plastic box, and it was filled with fresh raspberries.
Now it's an infamous scene in the book, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've had a long and successful career. What's been the greatest challenge in your journey as an author?
Well, I think the big challenge is really to just keep changing and pushing. And, you know, the danger is really when you become successful doing a particular kind of book, you know, there's maybe a temptation to just keep doing that same thing over and over and over because everyone's happy and it feels good and it seems easy. But the thing that you have to do for yourself as well as the readers is to just keep trying new things and continue to try to push your own skills as an author. And in fact, there's a thing that Margaret Mitchell, the author of Gone with the Wind, said that she used to have called the humbles, where anytime she felt like she was pretty good or she had done well, she would read something amazing that some other author had written, and then she would be like, why even bother? You know, if someone is this good writing. And I, at this point in my career, I still get the humbles frequently, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, that the challenge of, you know, being able to break through. I know that, you know, you started writing contemporaries. Has it been 4 years?
I think since 2006, wasn't it? So maybe five years now? Yeah.
I just have to say Sugar Daddy is actually in my top 10 of favorite books of all time.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
You know, I know that had to be... That had to be hard to. Did your fans resist? Did they come with you? Did you get like a new set of fans when you made that change?
Yeah. Well, yes. It was a frightening experience. It was mostly exciting, but it was frightening because, you know, there's always questions of whether or not you can do this new thing. I mean, I knew I could physically put the words on paper. Whether or not, you know, that I would have a good contemporary voice was a big concern of mine. And in fact, friend of mine and yours, Christina Dodd, was just tremendously supportive, and she was like, of course you can do it. You know, I mean, it's you're going to have to put some effort into it to change, but yeah, you can definitely find a contemporary voice. And so then when I started just with outline ideas and story ideas, that was a little scary because it was with a brand new editor who was just amazing, Jennifer Enderlin, and she kept sort of nudging me to put more personal feelings and personal reflections in the book, which also felt like I was sort of exposing myself a little bit. Right. So, but you know, once you get through an experience like that, it changes you for the better forever. It makes you a lot braver, I think, to try new things.
Well, tell me, who or what is your support system? Who keeps you sane? Who feeds the muse?
Well, more than anyone, my husband, Greg. I mean, he is just a fascinating man, incredibly intelligent, amazingly loving and affectionate, great sense of humor. So he needs to use all these things when dealing with me because, you know, I'm kind of a quirky person, and he understands that and accepts that. So he's wonderful. I have the most amazing set of very nurturing friends. I count you among them, by the way. And my friends are very patient and understanding. So if I need to drop out of sight for a little while because I'm working hard or going through a lot of challenges, you know, they know that's what a writer does. And so they know I'll resurface again, you know, apologetically later on.
Well, and of course, though, I just have to say it helps that you have a very handsome husband, too.
Thanks.
I mean, that certainly cannot hurt, right?
I appreciate that. You know, I actually grew up in Massachusetts and met some just terrific guys there, and they all seem to be like Greek or Italian, you know, kind of shorter, dark-haired, you know, really, you know, sexy guys there. So I always thought I would end up married to a short, dark-haired man, and then I moved to Texas. And I met Greg, and he's a big, tall, blonde guy. And I just, I don't know how I ended up with a big, tall, blonde guy, but I'll keep him, yeah.
So I have a question from the chat room, and they're asking if you ever get writer's block, and if you do, what do you do about it?
Oh, I do. Now, and I don't know if you would call it, I don't like to call it writer's block because I still can actually physically put words on paper. It's just that it's not inspired, and I can read over it later and say, you know, it's just not good. I mean, it doesn't work, and it just sort of stymies you for a few days. But I have found the only cure for it is to just keep pushing through it and to keep forcing yourself to write every day. And sooner or later, it's like something frees up and clears up. But take to heart something that I heard Nora Roberts say one time, which is, I can fix a bad page, but I can't fix a blank page. So, you know, that's something to keep.
That's very good.
She's. I would take any advice she wanted to give.
Now, where do you come up with your characters? Are they inspired by real people, or are they just the voices in your head come to life on the page?
I think it's a mixture. I mean, I definitely, you know, have been inspired by real people that I've known, and you know, for various reasons. And I mean, just a good example is when I started writing the Wallflower series. It was when I had met this particular group of women that Christina Dodd had introduced me to, Teresa Medeiros and Connie Brockway and Eloisa James, and so we had. We had just started to get to be friends and get to know each other, and their humor completely inspired me. And I mean, they're just such clever, funny women that a lot of that humor and that fun that I felt at this friendship, you know, really kind of came into the Wallflower novels.
Love it. Now, do you have time to read? And if so, who are you reading?
Well, yeah, I don't have enough time to read. That's the irony of being a writer, is that, you know, your favorite thing in the world to read is to read, and instead you're trying to create books. But I try to read a huge variety of books because I've always thought that, you know, you sort of are what you read, and I don't want to be limited to just one particular type of book. So even though I love romance novels, I read a lot of biographies. And I'm just fascinated by them. In fact, I've read one recently. I was just blown away. It was written by Gabrielle Hamilton, and it's called Blood, Bones, and Butter. Have you heard of this one?
No.
Have you read it yet? Oh, it is so interesting. It's a you know, real autobiography of how she became a professional chef and ended up starting this amazing little restaurant in New York City called Prune. But the way that she describes food, it just makes you so aware of the connection between food and emotion. And, you know, like when someone's having a tough day, the act of making them their favorite food to cheer them up. I mean, I know you and I both love to talk about, you know, food and stuff like that. So we're you would love this book, trust me.
And mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, well, I was going to say the other thing is I've been interested in magic realism, you know, and that's, as you know, something that I'm dabbling in now. And so books by Alice Hoffman I'm catching up on, and Sarah Addison Allen, who just wrote The Peach Keeper. You would love that one, too, I promise you. It's a great one.
Now, tell me, do you have one of your own novels that you feel a particular connection to?
Oh, yeah, I think, I mean, so many of them have meant something to me at various points in my career, either, you know, as a breakthrough, you know, just in terms of getting the career to a little bit different place, or personally where I've actually been able to kind of work out some of my own feelings or issues. And I think the one that, that did that latter thing for me most was Blue Eyed Devil. And when I wrote it, it certainly has nothing to do with my real life in terms of, you know, I have the most gentle, loving, kind husband in the world, and this is a story that starts out with a heroine being married to an abusive man. But the main issue of the book focuses on the dynamics of abuse and a lot of about narcissistic personality disorder, because in my past, I have known people, all of us have encountered people in our past who have been abusive in such small but persistent ways that it's really kind of torn us down. You know, you have a friend who always criticizes you, or, you know, you'll have a relative or a boyfriend who, you know, made you feel less than who you really were. And so exploring this kind of relationship in this book really helped me to feel much stronger and more confident and, you know, just more aware of you have to demand respect from other people, and you also have to respect yourself, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about your books, and there are a couple of questions on the board, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. But I want to know more about your new series. But now, before we start on that, you just got some exciting news you shared with me about a reprint with NAL.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. This is really exciting, actually. When I first started out my career, I started with New American Library, and I wrote 4 novels with them. And because it was the very beginning, I was still learning, basically. I mean, let's face it, your ideas of, you know, what your ideal relationship is at 20 is not at all what it is at, you know, age 40, you know?
Right.
Like, back in high school, I was one of the dangerous guys who treated you badly and wore black leather jackets. And, you know, you get older and you're like, I want a guy with a sense of humor, a fun, nice guy. So that being said, I wrote these 4 novels, and one in particular was the most successful that I had written with NAL, and it was called Love Come to Me. And it was actually set in the post-Civil War period in America in Concord, Massachusetts. So it's the story of this northern young woman, and she's got this tidy, nice, neat little life in Concord, and then this former Confederate soldier, this southern rebel, comes to Massachusetts, and he's interested in her, and she's already engaged to a Massachusetts guy, and so this hero, I guess, is the forerunner of all of my future heroes. He sort of had the quality of a Clypeus hero. So anyway, I just agreed with NAL to republish this book after more than 20 years, and it's actually going to be coming out August 30th, this August 30th.
August
30th. I'm really excited, and I haven't told anybody. You're the first person I've told.
Yay, all right. I'm seeing some comments that says, oh, post-Civil War, yes, please. That's great. That's what I said, too.
Well, you know, it's like back then, I don't know why. I was so happy with being able to explore different settings and different time periods. And now it just seems like the field has narrowed to where there are fewer available time periods that, you know, seem like they would be successful or even wanted by readers. So I'm going to be really thrilled and fascinated to see how this book does now, because it's almost like a new book coming out after so long, you know?
Right. Yeah. Now, tell us about the new series.
Oh, I am working on it as we speak. And I started this this new series. I'm just calling it my Friday Harbor series. I started it with a small novella-length book titled Christmas Eve at Friday Harbor, but it's basically centering on a family of 3 brothers who live on San Juan Island, which is a small island not far from the coast of Washington State, and the most spectacular set of islands, actually, that San Juan Island is a part of an how you pronounce it, archipelago? I know how to spell it, I don't know how to pronounce it, but so anyway, so it's this gorgeous area of the country, and the islands themselves have this completely special sort of radiant, almost magical atmosphere. I mean, you step off the ferry boat and you can just feel it. I mean, it looks almost like a fairy tale sort of place, and it's still, even though it is a popular tourist destination, it's still not too touristy, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
So I began to imagine things that might happen to this family of three brothers in this island setting that could actually borrow elements of magic realism. For example, you know, ghost stories. There's all these amazing ghost legends around this cemetery on the island. And so the book that I'm doing right now is titled Rain Shadow Road, and it's about one of these brothers, Sam, who has a vineyard, and he is going out with this young woman who is a glass artist. She makes stained glass windows, and magical things start to happen because of these windows that she's creating. So that's the book that I'm actually doing revisions on right now.
Oh, how fun is that? I love
it. Thank you. I thought it was really fun. And then the next brother, Alex, he's actually sort of an alcoholic, very dark, tormented character, and he's going to be haunted by a ghost because I've always wanted to do a ghost story.
Oh, that's great. So here you are reinventing yourself again.
I love it. Well, again, something that I had heard from, or read, actually, that Nora Roberts had said. She said, as long as you stay to the core of romance, as long as you provide those elements that are so satisfying and wonderful and exciting about a romance novel, then sure, you can experiment in other ways, and you can put romantic suspense in there, or in my case, magic realism. I think someone who does this brilliantly is Jane Ann Krenz, because, my goodness, she's written, I think, every genre of romance, and yet she always keeps that central core there. So that's the only requirement for me, is just make sure that the romance readers are happy.
I love it. Now, are you still going to be writing your historicals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. I don't have one in the works right now, and I think contractually I still have one left on a contract with St. Martin's right now. So I definitely want to finish the Friday Harbor series first, and then I don't know if I'll do a standalone or maybe a series. I just love doing historical series so much that I kind of hate the idea of just doing one by itself.
Sharina has a couple of ideas for you, because she's
good.
Over here. One question was, could Derek Craven's kids have a book? And I'll tell you, every time I see her, I like that idea.
The problem is, I don't want Derek to be old. So it's because you know it's I don't want to show him as, you know, as so advanced that, you know, he's still not the sexy, virile Derek that we remember. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but it would be tricky.
Now she's flexible, because now she's saying, will Lord Ravenhill ever get his own book?
Yeah, I have never forgotten about him. He was a minor character in Where Dreams Begin, and I don't know why, but I guess sometimes you feel more leeway with a minor character to throw in, you know, details or something that may be a little bit non-standard. So for whatever reason, he came out interesting enough that so many readers have asked me about him. So he has never been off the back burner, but he has been on that burner for a long time. So, yeah, there would definitely be a possibility for him in the future.
Now, what other books do you have in the works? You have the new series. You're going to have a historical at some point. Do you have anything else that's kind of floating around in your head?
Well, I mean, this is just like a thought that keeps occurring to me, but I don't know for sure if I would act on it. But, you know, I've wanted to try desperately to kind of slide on over from the Victorian England setting and just slide on over to New York in that same time. When I did the Wallflower series, I had a couple of characters who moved to New York, and then I had some New York characters go to England. And it just seemed to me that setting of New York in the, you know, mid to late 1800s is just brilliant for romance. I mean, so much it was going on, and it seems like such a sexy romantic time period. So, at some point I would love to explore that. I just don't know if, you know, readers and publishers would be willing to go for that.
Well, you know, I've said this more than once. You could write your grocery list, and I would read it. I would go there, Lisa.
Thank you. Well, it would just be interesting. I don't know. I would love to try other things too. You know, my editor Jennifer has been saying for a few years she would love for people to kind of go in the direction of Western romance, and I don't know if I would go there or not, but I'd love someone else to, for sure.
You know, I've seen a lot of the Westerns coming back, and I actually have read a couple that were it surprised me. I wasn't sure I'd like them, and I loved them. So,
oh, really? If you remember the titles, tell me, because, yeah, I'd love to read a couple of good ones, yeah.
Yeah, I will look those up, and we're going to put this podcast up on the blog, too, and I'll write that down so that everybody listening can get that as well. I do want to talk. We have, like, 5 minutes, but I've got to talk about it. Lifetime Achievement Award. What was that like?
It was just so amazing. Oh, Sheila, it was so exciting. So much went through my mind when I got the email from Carol Stacey at Romantic Times saying that they were going to give me that award, because it just felt so much of a full circle thing. When I started out, the main encouragement that I got in the industry, even before I got published, was from Romantic Times. And Catherine Falk had let me do a couple of reviews for the magazine and had just given me wonderful advice. And so when I found out that, you know, after all these years, that I was actually getting an award like that, I mean, it actually was another one of those, hey, I've kind of made it moments, you know. It was it was really exciting, so overwhelming, really.
That's exciting. Now, of course, I have to mention this. I got to mention the Telly Award, just because it's fun to me.
My favorite award,
right?
Yes. I love that. That was just the neatest surprise award, and I was flabbergasted. And you know, it's because of you, because I mean, you are so generous in allowing some collaboration occasionally. You know, like when an author feels like, you know, could we try this? You're open to that. So, you know, I love it. It's like our friendship got an award, you know?
I know. That's how it felt. And, you know, I was looking at the video of your acceptance speech for the Lifetime Achievement Award, and I saw in the background, I was like, oh, look, it's the Telly. I was so excited.
Now, I know. I loved it. I loved it. Well, it was an unusual book video, too. It was for A Wallflower Christmas, and the way that you did it, where it just had these really neat I don't know how you got that effect of the images, the pictures in there. They looked like hand-drawn, almost like like animation, sort of, you know.
You know,
and you have the toupee and the tree, you know.
I have to credit Mike Miller, who has edited all of your videos. I better not even think about letting somebody else edit one of your videos. So I'll go to Mike, and he did that. But, you know, it just... For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Lisa and I co-wrote a script for one of her Wallflower book videos, A Wallflower Christmas, and it won a Telly Award. And the Telly Award is, it's like an Emmy or an Oscar, but it's for commercials. It's very prestigious, very difficult to win, and actually it won the top award for the Tellys. So that was really exciting, but it was fun. And I'll tell you what was great is we put that up, and your publisher actually called me. I don't know if I told you that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I got a call, and they're saying, you know, can we use this? This is so great, and all of this. It was great.
You know what? It captured the spirit of the book, you know, so well, where it was kind of like this quirky, happy, funny video. So, you know, once again, you just kind of got the essence of the book down, which was terrific.
Now, that's telling us we're about to run out of time, but can you let everybody know where they can find you online?
I'm on Facebook. I encourage everyone to come visit me there, and that's really the main way to reach me right now. I wish I could give out an email address, but there's just no way I could ever answer the emails right now at this point. Maybe I need an assistant. I don't know.
I bet we have some volunteers here. So I will see you in New York very soon. Yay! I can't wait. And I want
me
to thank
too.
You so much for coming on the show. I told you this would go by fast.
Oh, this is just a pleasure as always. I can't wait to see you again.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. You can download the podcast, check out the blog at readersentertainment.com. It'll be up by the morning. And I'll make sure I'll write down a lot of the information that we talked about and send you some links. I'm Sheila English, your host. And thank you again, everyone, for joining us.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.